Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas!
Welcome to We Are the Watchers.
Look at this being 159. Well, episode number 159. Greetings!
That's a lot of numbers.
It is a lot. I had to double check because I thought it was 158, but that felt too familiar.
Yeah.
That's because I was last week's.
So we're just living in the loop.
Yeah, that's right. Groundhog Day style.
Palm Springs.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to watch that and I still intend to, but I haven't yet.
You should. It's up there as a contender for film of the year for me.
Which we will be finding out more about in the new year. I think it's the first week of January. We're going to do our top five watches.
Look at that. Us planning ahead.
Yeah. Of course, we like to keep things a bit of a secret until we cement in guests. But
correct. We've got a potential.
Yeah.
Strong potential.
Because we've cemented in Mick.
He has opinions.
He does, and he was so good last time. Do you think we should talk about the other things we're doing? Because they're pretty cemented in as well, right?
Why not?
If not, pretend you never heard this.
Correct.
So next week's episode is going to be Christmas themed, getting in the spirit of things.
Getting into the ho-ho-hos.
That's exactly it. And then the week after, which I believe is Christmas Eve, we'll be giving you a Watchersville audio drama.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's right. We'll find out a little bit more about the people from Watchersville.
Oh, good.
Christmas style.
Yes.
That will involve, we won't give all of it away. There's a nice, cool, ridiculous surprise. And then, of course, our movie and TV quiz will be on the following week. Between Christmas and New Year, we'll get all, you'll literally know every single person who's on it.
There's so much stuff coming. It's already making me yawn
from
tiredness.
I know. And I love the fact that we've been talking about this for weeks, but we still don't feel prepared for it. Or just all of it to be done.
Oh, God. Life right now is one unprepared hustle.
Do you think that's just December?
I think it's because I've got a nearly four-month-old baby.
How much Christmas shopping have you been able to do? You must have done it all online.
I've done a fair bit.
Yeah.
Lynn's and Shay are completely sorted.
Awesome. I've
got good things there. Lily, the newborn, I don't know what she wants.
Just get her some clothes.
You can't even
get her a book.
Might get her some shoes.
Oh, yeah, shoes would be
okay. I do like dressing her up in fun shoes. She's wearing a pair of Air Jordans today.
Oh, cool. Mm. What colour?
Red and black.
Of course, classic, right?
Yeah.
Might need to see photographs of that later.
Sure.
If you can sort that
out. Might get a photo of the shoe collection because there's some fresh sneakers in there.
Okay. Shoe collection, look out for it somewhere.
Get excited, everybody.
I know.
I want to apologize in advance for how much I'm yawning. I'm so tired.
Well, you were tired yesterday.
Yeah.
And I assume that you've had an equally rubbish night's sleep.
Look, school holidays have begun. Which means I've got an extra pair of hands. And that can be helpful, but that also means changes in routine. And babies don't like that. So every day at the moment, I'm enjoying about 90 minutes to 2 hours of being screamed directly in my face.
That's nice.
Which, that's what some directors are going for with their films. They want to assault you in the face. Mm. It's like watching Crank 2 High Voltage. Directly beamed into your brain.
What you can do, though, is you can sort of in the back of your mind just be like, when I get old and you have to take care of me, Lily, I think I might scream too.
Oh, I don't know if I'm going to make it that long.
Payback.
Ugh.
Payback.
Greetings, subscribers and members of the Watchersville latest newsletter. With all the rain and sunshine we've been having, plants all over the town have had major growth spurts. Instead of hiring a huge gang of ride-on lawnmower operators, this year the council is borrowing all the quokkas the Watchersville Zoo has. As everyone knows, they really like eating grass, bark, leaves and stems, so should be able to get all the lawns and gardens sorted in no time. The zoo has warned to fence off anything you don't want them to consume. Veggie patches, cottage gardens and the hockey pitch's AstroTurf. Spare a thought for our sister city, Listen Cove, who had a terrible storm rip through their part of the coast. There was the usual wind, rain, thunder, lightning and waves that made a right mess. One odd phenomenon that occurred was that it rained sharks and librarians down on the town. Roofs were badly damaged, and when people screamed at the terror of it, the librarians told them to shh. The insurance companies, like the rest of the folk, are pretty confused by the whole disaster, but have promised those affected they will get something or other as compensation. Meanwhile, the sharks have been returned to the sea and the librarians have been given piles of books to sort out while officials try to figure out where on earth they came from. The debating team will this week open up the Pandora's box of a question and fight over which Pete is better in the 90s Nickelodeon TV show, Pete and Pete. Warnings have been issued for anyone thinking of going to watch. If you recall, last time ended in big fights, chair throwing and people having to move out of the country. That's it for now. Stay safe and happy, all residents of Watchersville.
Quiz this week?
Yes. Anyway, I know I sound tired, but I'm going to summon all of my energy because I've got some exciting news. I've got some appreciation to do. I have watched a few things and I've half watched some things.
I half watched some stuff as well.
Oh, we should have a segment today of it's the half watch didn't finish.
Yep. And the reasons were.
Yes. Mm. So we can call it We Are the Watchers asterisk.
Yeah, that's it. I love it. All right, let's get into the news. You're super excited. Hit me with your best news story.
My favorite piece of news this week. So Eric Andre show had their finale, their 50th episode, end of season 5.
Was it Christmassy?
No. Ah. But it was a celebration type thing. Originally, when he was doing the show, I think he was envisioning that it might be the series finale. And then now that he's finished, he's realized that he's got a show where he can do anything he wants. He only has to do a new season every four. It's been 4 years since the last one. Don't put a pin in this. He'll return to it.
Yeah, cool.
However, episode 9. So every episode begins with him destroying the set in some sort of random way. And it's always different. There are bits and pieces that recur throughout, but it's... They put a lot of, like, they filmed for like 3 days consecutively of him destroying the sets in ridiculous ways. Anyway, so he'd done some random stuff and then he ran back towards the camera and was doing something. And then suddenly Adam Conover from Adam Ruins Everything pops up into frame and starts explaining how he's not actually ruining the set, that this is a dummy set that they use all the time. And then Eric runs up and fly kicks him in the back of the head, throws him across the desk, knocks him out. Swallows a bunch of bullets, pulls his pants down, farts out the bullets and shoots Adam in the head. And weirdly, canon-wise, this now comes after the series finale of Adam Ruins Everything. So technically, in universe, Adam died on his appearance.
There was so much in there.
I know. I had to explain a lot of steps to get to that point.
I tried to reason it all and then realized I couldn't, so I just accepted the information.
Yes, so it was very strange.
But I do have one question. Yes. Is he still painting himself orange?
Yes. Oh, yeah. So this season, Eric is completely hair-free all over, and he's shown that fact many times. He's put on probably 20 kilos intentionally, tanned every morning to make himself super orange, whitened his teeth. It's horrible. Every season he has a different complete look. So one year he straightened his afro and styled himself on Cat Williams and looked like a 90s pimp.
Yep.
The following season he didn't wash for 4 months before they started filming and made his hair go into terrible looking dreadlocks.
Okay.
And like
rubbed
tuna on himself to make himself as unappealing for the guests as possible. Anyway.
He's got some ideas.
That's enough about Eric Andre. Reason why I was so excited to see Adam. So he was promoting that on Twitter and then it gave him a fantastic opportunity to announce that he has a new show coming to Netflix next year produced by the Obamas.
There's just so many names that don't make sense.
I know. So Obama's production company, the Obamas, they have their company that funds good causes.
Yes, yes.
They are, I can't remember the name of the book, but they purchased the rights for this book 3 years ago that is a behind-the-scenes look at how government works.
Right.
So this program is going to be called The G Word.
As in government?
As in the government. And it's all about Adam pulling back the layers and telling you how things actually work.
I reckon this guy's super busy.
Oh, he's always busy.
Because last week you were talking about that show about, it's like a man's name, like John someone.
Yes, How To with John Wilson.
Okay, so he's now on he now will be on Netflix for this Obama special.
So I don't think it's even a special. I think it's going to be
a series, awesome.
Yeah, multiple episodes and it's a you know, aimed at adults, informative, educational, how the government actually works.
Mm-hmm.
Which sounds cool.
Yep.
I'm on board for it.
he's such an interesting choice. Like, as soon as you hear his name, you're like, okay, how's he, how, what's he going to do?
Yeah.
Like, what is he? Not what's he going to do? It's impossible. As in, what on earth is he going to include in this?
So Adam Conover, it's just going to be like Adam Ruins Everything.
Yeah.
It's going to be that sort of style. I don't think it's going to go too silly or absurdist and stuff.
I wouldn't think so if it's an Obama production.
Yeah. Hmm. But there's some cool people involved behind the scenes. Anyway,
that's awesome.
I have no info on when that will come out or anything like that, but
It's happening. Okay, I'm like reading things, trying to see out of my stories which one you think you also have. I'll go with this one. I don't think you have this one, but it was a story that's been all over the internet the past couple of days. I thought it's worth mentioning.
Sure.
So actually more than a few days, about a week, Netflix listened to the request of Britain's culture secretary, Oliver Dowden, I think his name is. He was asking them to attach a fictional disclaimer to The Crown, even though they're not a big fan of the fact that the dramatization makes some of the royals look like caricatures. Apparently some of the royals who are in it think the same thing. Netflix said you have to deal with it. We're not putting disclaimers anywhere near that show.
Fair.
Well, also, it's season four.
From what I understand, right, the first two seasons specifically were dealing with a period where there's not that many people still alive. And those that are probably aren't watching as much Netflix as younger people.
Sure.
So it wasn't something that people who were there and knew the actual circumstances could chime in and go, that's not quite right.
Mm.
Whereas now that it's caught up and people were alive for this and remember that, then now they're starting to chime in with like, hang on a second.
We're also sort of in that era where the British tabloids really got excited about the royals, particularly Princess Diana.
Yep.
Or Lady Diana, as I...
Well, from what I understand, no one is happy with how Prince Charles has been portrayed, which is hilarious because apparently they've just been portraying him how he used to act. And he spent 20 years trying to rehabilitate his image, and the last season and a half or whatever has completely undone that for him.
It's reminded people of him. Hmm, interesting. So, yeah, they said, no way, we're keeping it as is, which is fair enough.
Cool.
But I'm sure they said, but thank you for the publicity, cultural department. All right, now you tell a story,
all right,
a new story, and I'll see if I've got it.
All right, so this is also from Netflix.
Yes.
And it came out yesterday, I think, that they are going to be doing a reboot of Heartbreak High in 2022.
I saw that they were going to have Heartbreak High on, like the old episodes.
Mm.
So a reboot makes total sense because that show, I feel like it went for ages. Back in the day.
Never watched it. No interest. And yeah.
My mother at the... That's a weird sentence.
Your mother at the time.
At the time, my mother was working at a high school where quite a few of the lesser characters were from.
Right.
They sort of scooped them out of there, which was pretty cool. And I was aware of that. Therefore, I was heavily into the show. I was like, oh, my mum knows these people. I don't.
So were you into, and I want to say the only character's name was Drazik?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was around the time that I was watching it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Drazik, I think his name was.
I don't know. I know him as one of the guys that gets the shit beat out of him by Captain America in the lift in Winter Soldier.
It's been a fair bit. Over in the US.
And then I think he was like the Terminator
army,
or something.
He was like a soldier. Oh, he might have been in that movie where they go and kill Osama bin Laden.
Yeah, SEAL Team 60 or something? SEAL Team 6. It's not 60 SEAL teams. Was that the one where Chris Pratt got jacked, or is that Zero Dark Thirty I'm thinking of? Who knows? They're war films that we don't give a shit about.
They're not the good ones.
No.
We like the good ones.
Vietnam earlier of... Jog on.
Yeah, right.
I don't want to see stuff from a war that I could have potentially been in.
Oh, yep. I completely understand. I like the ones where there's a lot of dueling. I don't understand how dueling was around for so long because it's such a stupid idea.
Oh, the idea of like being very honourable and lining up.
Let's see which one of us shall die.
Yeah.
Too right, sir.
Best duel ever is in Indiana Jones when the guy goes hit him with the whip and he just.
That was awesome. Okay. Wait, what were we talking about?
Heartbreak High.
Heartbreak High. So
it's
Heartbreak
a thing.
High. That make it's a high school show for high school kids to watch. It's a soapy. People are Just the same way Babysitter's Club came out again.
Yep. Or Saved by the Bell or Fuller House, or it's just double dipping on something that they're getting some views on at the moment.
And more so than Fuller House. Well, no, Fuller House is a bit different, I guess. But more so than Saved by the Bell, it didn't need to be, hey, look, these are the kids of the people who were it. The kids are in the original.
But there will be some of that.
There will be, because it'd be like Degrassi, where there'll be one or two and then suddenly it won't be about them anymore.
At least one or two of the cast will be back as teachers.
They're always teachers, aren't they?
Because there's always one or two that never escape the vortex of the school.
And their name is usually Snake.
Mm.
I think he was the teacher in Degrassi in the beginning.
Mm. I have a glaring black hole of knowledge when it comes to
Drake's Degrassi.
Teen high school drama.
Don't worry, I got you.
Good, because I just cannot stand that stuff at all.
Oh, I loved it. You probably wouldn't have liked Press Gang if you had ever encountered it.
No, I was
either.
Too young for Press Gang. The only Degrassi I really caught was Drake era.
Mm.
And
I didn't watch that one.
Whatever.
I was over it by then. I think Heartbreak High will be a success.
Well, I imagine they're going to spend a lot of money. It'll create some good jobs down here in Australia, so good on them. Maybe the Auntie Donna boys can have a cameo at some point.
Oh, yes, please.
If you aren't getting your watches fixed just by listening, follow the watches on Twitter and Instagram.
Have you seen that the new additions to the cast lineup for that Robert Kirkman animated series Invincible?
Strong.
So let's have a look at the lineup that they threw at us previously. I can't remember how long ago. Sandra Oh, Seth Rogen, Gillian Jacobs, Mark Hamill. I'm just skimming some of the names. There's so many. Jason Mantzoukas.
Derek from Good Place.
Mm, heaps of them.
Stephen Ewan is the main character.
He's the
character.
Main character, yeah.
J.K. Simmons is his father, which is bang on casting.
I really hope he's angry.
I don't want to say to...
It's just that I know that he's... Okay, so Stephen Ewan is the son of a superhero who ends up with
J.K.
powers,
Simmons,
right?
J.K. Simmons is Superman.
Okay.
Basically. And Stephen Ewan is his son with a human woman. He inherits some of
like
the powers.
Aquaman.
Sure. He starts inheriting some of the powers. There's a huge twist. Do I give a spoiler warning?
Nah,
give the twist?
Let's save it because it's going to come out soon.
Yeah, and they'll have to get to the twist in the first season.
I'm going to ask you afterwards what it is.
Sure, it changes everything about that setup of storyline.
Okay,
and makes it fascinating.
Well,
so throw out some new names. Who have you got that they've added?
Did we say that this was animated? We did.
We did.
We?
Yes.
Okay, cool. How about a Nicole Byer?
Mm.
She's playing two characters, Vanessa
the
and Fiona. Yep. John Hamm.
Do
it
know,
feels like a
do
John
know
Hamm
who
thing.
He's playing?
He is Steve.
Oh, cool.
Who's Steve? Can you give us a rundown?
Nope.
Okay, because that's a twist.
No, there's a lot of characters that are worth you just meeting yourself.
Okay. Ezra Miller is D.A. Sinclair. Okay.
I'm tired of Ezra Miller.
Okay, good. I wasn't sure if the character was annoying. Well, by default now it will be annoying for you. And Mahershala Ali, Titan.
Cool.
Big names.
Is there someone on the list that we know who's playing Machine?
Jeffrey Donovan.
Cool. That's cool.
There's so many names in this cast.
I know. It's very strong. Well, look, it's a huge sprawling universe. So obviously Kirkman, he's got Skybound and stuff, and it was off on its own thing. And then somehow he convinced the other creators at Image to let him play in their universes or make a shared universe with them.
That's really fun.
And at one point, Invincible, I can't remember how it comes to pass, but he accidentally ends up in the Marvel Universe for about 14 minutes, stuck on a rooftop with Spidey.
Oh, no way.
And it's perfect because he is...
So wait, where do you find this story? Is it in a Spider-Man comic?
No. Yes. Okay, so that occurred in... All right. Real behind-the-scenes stuff here.
Yeah.
Kirkman was writing a 12-issue Marvel team-up series at the time. Marvel team-up, every issue is normally Spider-Man and someone else or, you know, that sort of setup. And it was in the middle of one of those issues where for two pages, Invincible falls into the universe. Spidey tries to help him out. Then he suddenly is gone again and Spidey goes back on his mission. That's all it is.
So it's a cameo.
Yep. But because Kirkman was writing it and he owned those characters, he could get away with that. And it was perfect him meeting Spider-Man because the character is meant to be Spider-Man, but with parents that are still around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that same sense of power equal responsibility.
Yeah.
And this show is going to be great. You have no idea how violent it's going to be.
Well, the episodes sound like they're going to be pretty substantial. I think there's going to be 8 in the first series and they're 1 hour long. And so that's a lot for an animation.
It will be MA.
Yeah, okay.
If not R. Like, you know, I feel very confident in saying that because...
So because it's on Amazon Prime...
Yep.
I'm assuming it's going to have, like, kind of like, if you liked The Boys or if you liked Utopia, it'll recommend it to you.
Okay. If you liked The Boys, you will like this.
Okay.
Yeah. This has huge potential to be a real breakout thing.
Awesome.
And it weirdly balances the hope of a Spider-Man character with a world that does not deserve that level of hope.
Okay.
Look at me dancing around.
Yeah, I can't wait to finish this recording so I can find out what it is. Have you got any more stories?
I've got two more. They're both quite brief. One is Josh Gad. He's big in the reunion game.
At the moment.
He put together, a couple of days ago, he put together the Wayne's World guys. I don't know if you saw, but he got Alice Cooper and all the bands that were in the movies and this sort of stuff.
That's awesome. I didn't even know about this one. Somehow that just...
I know. They I didn't see any promotion or anything for it beforehand.
Because I knew about the Goonies one.
Yes. So I haven't sat down and watched this one yet, but I very much intend to.
Mm.
Like a bowl of just brown M&Ms to do so.
I wouldn't mind watching the first Wayne's World again. It's been a while. The
first
second
one holds up. The second one's pretty shaky.
But remember at the time I remember at the time watching the second one and going, we all like this because of the hype of the first one.
Yep. But something you do get like Rip Taylor throwing out the confetti at the end.
Is Ed O'Neill in the second one?
No, he's in the first one. Yeah. I mean, he might be in the second one a little bit. But the first one is when they go to the restaurant and he starts talking into camera and then Wayne, hey, over here.
And that was around the time where they do their Foxy Ladies dance?
Correct.
Yeah, that's cool. That sounds awesome. I like what Josh Gad's doing.
He's definitely carving himself out a bit of a niche.
Yeah, for sure.
Good on him.
And the fact that he's obviously doing it with the best intentions, so much so that everybody originally involved with all of these projects are on board to jump back in and do it again.
Yep. I think it speaks phenomenal. A lot to his nice guy, not in persona, but, you know, people respect him as an actual nice guy. And I think that's really coming through in this time.
Yeah, I agree.
He keeps just doing stuff for Disney that they haven't completely asked for.
And they haven't said no?
Well, he wrote an Olaf special for Frozen and then recorded it at home and got the animators to do it. And like that was an onboard thing, but then he recorded a whole bunch more for them to do as well.
And they're like, thanks,
we'll find a use for this maybe
soon.
I don't know.
Very, very soon.
Searching for felines near Melmac. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
I saw that Helen Hunt, who, you know, I personally don't see that much of her anymore. And when I do, I'm always pleasantly surprised because she doesn't look ridiculous in that she hasn't had 40 million different procedures to make herself look younger. She just looks like a person.
Mm.
And I got a lot of respect for actresses who just do that. Just continue as are. This is my age. This is what I look like. She's still getting cast, which is amazing. So she's been cast in it's a TV kind of adaptation, but it's more of a continuation of a movie from a couple of years ago called Blind Spotting. This is going to be on Stars over in the US. So the movie centered around Ashley, who's that actress in Hamilton who plays Aunt Peggy. That's what she's famous for saying Aunt Peggy twice in the first act.
Because
that's what she is. And the reason she was in that movie is because it was produced by David Diggs. And he's in the movie as well. And I'll read the synopsis because I haven't seen the movie. So she's on the verge of middle-class life in Oakland when her partner is suddenly incarcerated. She's forced to move in with his mother, Helen Hunt, and that's triggered a whole existential crisis. And apparently Helen Hunt's character is very opinionated on a lot of things. So everybody who was in the movie, it sounds like, well, sorry, the three main stars who are in the movie are also in the show, and the show will continue the story. Have you got one more?
I got one more. So a little bit of news from the Emmys. They have merged the variety talk and sketch series categories back into one, which is a shame.
Yeah, I feel like that, especially in 2020, there's a fair bit of that kind of stuff.
Not really. So they broke it out. It was either 2012, 2015. I can't remember. But they broke it out because there were so many late night shows that were all competing with your Saturday Night Lives and things like that. In the last year, there've only been three eligible sketch programs, and there's only six late night shows running. So for this year and stuff, and for the foreseeable, it makes sense to fold that back down. Now, it's annoying because Saturday Night Live always gets a nomination and never wins. The never winning is not the annoying part, but it just means it makes it very difficult for John Oliver to win again. And it means that it makes it very difficult for the Auntie Donna boys to get a look in and stuff like that.
Yeah,
now, of course,
being
streaming, they don't get quite the same look in and stuff like that, but this is all kind of changing this year a little bit. However, almost making up for the combination of basically the only two categories I gave a shit about was they've added a new category called Outstanding Stunt Performance by an Individual or a Team in a Drama, Comedy, Limited Series or Movie.
Are you thinking Eric Andre?
No, I'm not even I'm like it's about time that Hollywood honors the stunt people. They are the people literally getting hurt for the craft.
And there's so many shows that involve them. Like just off the top of my head, whenever there's a fight scene in any Walking Dead, there's some people. If the zombies are...
This is where Daredevil on Netflix would have gotten its Emmy Award.
The Witcher.
You know what I mean? There's so many shows. Game of Thrones, potentially.
Yeah, Game of Thrones.
There are so many different programs that can fit within that. I think that's why they've gone so wide with drama, comedy, limited series, and movie. If this is a hit this year and next year, I can see them breaking out into movies, television. Start going by genre.
When you first said about the merging of the sketch and the Tonight kind of shows, because I just had Josh Gad in the back of my head, I was like, oh, we've had heaps of that sort of stuff. But I guess they've been in other places, haven't they? And that's the thing.
That's just it. So much sketch comedy. You know, last year had I Think You Should Leave. This year they've had Auntie Donna. They don't do tons of sketch. They do plenty of sitcom.
Yeah, that's true.
And sketch is very difficult to get off the road. Now, you've also got the Baroness von Sketch program going at the moment, and then there's a couple of other smaller ones.
That's true.
It says a lot about the state of the game at the moment that most people are doing their things online, short form.
And that's exactly what it is. And so much so that it didn't even occur to me that that wasn't an Emmy eligible area. But what I like about the Emmys doing this is it means that they are changing and adapting whenever they need to, let's pretend back in the early 90s there was only one talk show in the daytime, and it would just have meant that just give Oprah the award every year. They probably did, I don't know, but yeah, like to expand and close and open and shut other things, it's good.
Yep.
Yeah.
Have to change with the times.
Absolutely.
Get out of my newsroom.
Oh, yes, sir.
Get into my appreciation car. Ready? Beep, beep. Because it's the Tom appreciation segment. That's a good bit of harmonizing.
Good falsetto as
Thanks.
Well. That was nice. Okay.
This week's just a brief one.
Uh-huh.
But it's someone who I've loved for a long time. It's Tom Kenny, who it was on my mind this week because the SpongeBob the Musical Live special has finally dropped on iTunes. I've been waiting for this for quite some time. I really, like, genuinely wanted to go and see the SpongeBob musical because supposedly it's
really good.
An acid trip of a watch.
Right, okay.
And that show has fantastic songs, and it is all boiled down to the energy Tom Kenny brings, and he plays SpongeBob on stage in this musical, and it's from what I've seen, it's seeing a cartoon come to life.
What? Okay, so have you watched any of this yet?
No, No. I've seen a trailer and then I shut it down until I can sit down and watch it properly.
Oh, I have a feeling we'll be discussing this.
I think so. I think I'll be getting a soundtrack for that too, driving a car.
I have a feeling I may even it's be the doing best like the.
best day.
It's going to be like Auntie Donna. I'm going to ask you each week.
I only watched it once this week.
Oh, that's not that. It makes it seven. Is that seven?
Yeah, seven total.
I'm impressed. I remember the amount.
Thanks. And Tom Kenny has been in so many different things, talking sketch comedy. He was part of the Mr. Show with Bob and David back in the late 90s and things scattered through a bit of there. Obviously a lot of SpongeBob.
Yeah, that's been going for years.
He's involved in Ren and Stimpy.
Mm-hmm. I like the way you said that. That was appropriate. But at the time, everybody was on board.
Yep.
And that's that bit. Oh, yeah, okay. He's one of those people that just seem to keep working all the time.
He does, and he is beloved by those who work with him.
Which is good. Mm-hmm. It's like a Josh Gad kind of thing.
From what I understand, he's a big turn around and give a hand up.
Nice.
Loves to bring people with him on the journey. What a dude.
I suspect there's not that many of them around, so that's amazing.
Not in voice animation, from what I understand.
Yeah, right.
It's very, very cutthroat.
There was that... There was that YouTube channel. I can't remember what it was called. It's only been around for a couple of years, I think. And it had Troy Baker.
Yep.
Nolan North.
Yep.
They were the hosts.
Yep.
There was some kind of, I don't know what it was, and Troy Baker just disappeared.
Yep. Yeah, Robert Paulson does one as well, who does a lot of the Disney stuff. I think he's Winnie the Pooh at the moment and things like that.
Yeah, right.
Similar sort of show, and it is funny when you watch. There are some people come on and they're very chatty, and there's other people, and it's so voice animation. Voicing for animation is a little bit different than any other role because if you get cast in a role, that's your job.
Mm.
But if you're doing a voice on an animated show and you can do another voice, you could do that voice. Mm. So the idea of giving that role to someone else is cannibalizing your own money.
Yep.
So
makes sense.
Anyone that does do that gets a big thumbs up from me.
Mm.
You know, it turns around and helps other people. Good on you.
Yeah, and it's obviously been acknowledged and paid off for him. That's a great Tom.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate that, and I appreciate you, Tom Kenny.
Yeah.
Keep up the good work.
Here's to you.
I hope you find out about the Krabby Patty.
Let's get into some watching suggestions.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
I've got a reading suggestion, actually.
Oh, do you? I keep meaning to do some reading. I've been given some books that are lovely, and I'm going to be sitting down and reading them when I have an appropriate moment.
Yeah, that'll be nice to be able to just do that.
Keep cracking it. I get a page or two in, and then somebody distracts me.
Somebody cries in your face for 90 minutes. Well, we were wonderfully gifted.
Yeah.
Is that the word? Some books from Penguin Random House Australia.
Yeah, they sent Santa over with a bit of a sack of some great books. Early release.
Yes, thank you very much. So I've been reading because we kind of were like, all right, who's going to read what when? Because we were interested in all of them.
Yeah.
So I picked up Ready Player Two.
I had a feeling you would.
Yeah, I appreciated the fact that I could tell you were standing back. Yeah. You're like, I know what that is. And it's not bad. I haven't finished it. I'm halfway through. It's not bad. I think if you had read the first book, you're going to really like it. If you had just watched a movie, you might get confused by all the references.
I was going to say, I've seen some chunks of references being thrown around on Twitter, and
there are a lot.
Thorough.
Yeah, it's like the first book. He even throws in references to songs, and you're like, I know the name of that band, and you have to go onto Spotify and check just to have a little listen. You're like, oh yeah, I know that one. I really know that one. So this one, the main four at the main four of the first movie are, I don't know, should I give away what happens at the end?
Probably not. The books, is it out yet or it just came out a few days ago or something?
No, I mean
The film.
Well, the film and the movie, because the second book basically picks up a year after the book, the original.
Sure. It's up to you.
Okay, I'll try and skirt around it.
Yeah.
If you've seen it already, you'll know. And so it's a year on. They're all in different places.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe their friendships are not as strong as they used to be, because some of them have lost their purpose, their drive.
Okay.
They're just sort of
aimlessly
wandering around, just doing day to day. And I'm enjoying this one in that there's a lot more virtual reality stuff instead of, it was kind of virtual reality, but it's more so in this one. There's a lot more social media talk about.
Sure.
Is involved in this. And it is officially going to be my 20th book of the year, because I set the challenge to 20 and I'm up to 19, and this one will see me till the end. So
this is 20 of 20.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Good book. If you, I do think, though, you need to read the first one.
It's a good book. Asterix requires prior reading.
Absolutely. I just don't think the movie's going to give you enough.
Mm.
But I'm into it. It's the action and the puzzles and the Easter egg hunting that was involved in the first one. So great fun.
Very nice. So I watched something the other day, a little bit against my will.
Oh, no.
No. Oh, no. It was fine.
Okay.
It's just not my bag.
Fair. I see. I think I know what you – this is what you were alluding to before, right?
Maybe.
The one that you half watched?
No.
Oh, you watched all of this?
Well, we've watched all of this three times.
Oh, I think maybe Shay's involved in this one.
Yeah, and Lynn's together. I'd been warning you for a few weeks that Mariah has a Christmas special. So it's up on Apple Plus, dropped Friday late afternoon, and I think I've seen it three times already. I know it's been watched more than that. Maybe you've seen, maybe you've not, but Mariah's got a song with Ariana Grande and Jennifer Hudson, and that is a falsetto warble off.
I bet it is. Are the other two a bit scared to over warble over Mariah?
No, so there's a harmonized warble between Ariana and Mariah.
Mm.
Mariah is in the most bedazzled frock you've ever seen. Jennifer is a step down from that, and Ari is made to wear a non-bedazzled dress.
Oh,
so
no.
There's a definite hierarchy.
Holy
there.
Holy cow.
And not in a catty, bitchy way. They're,
we've established this is what divas do.
They're respecting the queen.
Yep.
You know
good.
What I mean?
That's good.
Ariana would not have a career without Mariah laying the groundwork. So it's that sort of fun. So their song is good fun. Billy Eichner's having plenty of fun throughout. He's playing the head elf trying to help save Christmas.
He's done a few Christmas things the past few years.
But it's a really subdued Billy. He doesn't scream
right.
and
He's
get angry once. No. And so I found that somewhat disconcerting.
Mm.
Snoop and Jermaine Dupri show up. Snoop dressed as Santa and is fucking ruined. There's no other way to put it. Snoop is pleased to be there.
Yeah, right. Okay.
But I don't think he's fully there.
Okay, right. It's on character.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
On so brand, I should say.
Yeah, so he shows up for a very short rap at one point, but he does stand on a balcony and dance for quite some time as Santa.
Not choreographed, I'm assuming.
God, no. It's in the midst of a choreographed dance.
Brilliant.
Everyone else is doing their thing. And very interesting, Mariah's boyfriend, I think he's still boyfriend, I don't know, who is a choreographer,
mm-hmm.
is the only dancer allowed to touch Mariah. I don't know if it's allowed, but if you watch throughout, the only person who actually touches her for interactions is him. I don't know if that's a COVID thing.
Oh, could be.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
What an interesting thing to watch, because Mariah traditionally has done a lot of the, you know, get five dancers to stand there and pretend that they're a chaise lounge for her to lay on, or that sort of maneuver. It's a lot scaled back.
I think the COVID thing, you're onto something with that. That makes logical sense. So how long is the special?
Oh, just under an hour.
Okay.
Maybe a bit under an hour. I can't.
So it doesn't sound like it outstays its welcome.
I haven't paid attention through the whole thing yet, but I'm not a big Christmas special guy at the best of times. Like, I struggled through the Bill Murray one, and I love Bill Murray and almost everyone involved in that. And I don't know why, but I find them a bit tough.
Yep.
But Linz and Shay are absolutely loving it. They've got the soundtrack. It's been pumping in the car. If you like a cheery, timeless Christmas thing, timeless is not the right word. There's a lot of stuff that dates it. However, it is the most extra thing I've ever seen. Well, and that's why it's worth watching.
The fact that you're talking about all the sequence. Now,
well, Billy has to call Mariah to get her to help save Christmas.
Oh, there's a storyline?
Only Mariah.
I just singing songs.
No, only Mariah has the power to save Christmas.
Okay.
And like,
of course she does.
Exactly. That's what I mean. It's so extra. It's not just a Christmas special. It's not just her bedazzled and singing her guts out. There's a storyline that clearly solidifies after writing the biggest Christmas song of the last 50 years. She is the only person that could save Christmas in 2020.
So apart from All I Want for Christmas Is You, which I don't know
they
whether...
They tease that all throughout.
So it's like being at a concert.
Yeah, and the refrain comes in, you're like, is she going to do it? And then she's doing warm vocal warm-ups and then sings a different song and stuff. And then it ends and they're like, oh, we saved Christmas. And she's like, no, yeah, we didn't.
Brilliant. Oh, my God, so good. Question. Are there other classic Christmas songs in there or are they new ones that we don't know?
There's a couple that you don't know and then there's a couple of Mariah-style twists on some classic. So the one with Snoop is a twist on Here Comes Santa Claus. Oh, God. And
I think she'd like to sing Santa. No, I don't know if she'd sing Santa Baby.
No, she doesn't. So
there's not enough warbling in that.
There's not enough warbling and she doesn't do sexy for the sake of sex. Okay. Like that's a strip tease song, you know?
Yeah, that's not her
vibe. It's very flowy, ethereal R&B stuff.
So she would be... White Christmas.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Yeah. Obviously not Bing Crosby-ing the situation, Mariah-ing it.
Yeah, Mariah-ing it. There is a sequence of her walking through a fake snow forest, lost.
Of course there is.
Billy leads them the wrong way.
So much.
I think you're really going to enjoy this.
Oh, my gosh. It sounds brilliant.
It's so cheesy, but as a, like, it's the sort of thing normally I'd let the girls put on and I'd leave the room.
Yeah.
But I was like 30 seconds in and sucked in of just, holy crap.
Because it's a lot.
It's so much. And people have clearly stepped in and said, are you sure about this to her? And she's gone like, no, more. Lay it on. I know this is saccharine and sweet and like too much.
Yeah.
I am Mariah.
We're leaning into it.
I am too much.
Yeah, okay.
Her kids are in it. Of course they are. And I have speaking roles and all this sort of stuff.
But not her ex Nick Cannon, I wouldn't think.
He's not. And then there's a random ring in there at Christmas who's disappointed because something's not happening right with their Christmas, so she fixes her Christmas too. Is there anything she can't do?
I just didn't realize how much of a hero she is.
She
sang a song about
hero. She gets to write a script. She's definitely the hero.
That's it. Oh,
anyway,
wow.
My big thinking with all of this is we've had a Bill Murray Christmas special. We've had a Michael Bolton Christmas special. We've had a Mariah Carey Christmas special. Mm. How the fuck does Snoop not have his own?
It's
a very, very, very green Christmas.
It's going to – well, I have to say I was a little bit surprised when you said he was dressed as Santa because I thought he was going to come out as Snoop in – Christmas colours.
Oh, no, he's clearly Snoop just put on a cheap Santa outfit.
I get you.
But, like, yeah, how does he not have a song of an album of weed-themed Christmas songs?
It doesn't make any sense.
Just
Apple may not do it.
Oh, no, I don't see them doing it.
But Netflix would.
Anyone else would jump at that. Yeah. Netflix would love it.
They would do it.
But bouncy versions of O Tannenbaum.
Oh, imagine him rapping Good King Wenceslas.
But I'm even happy with him doing his singy stuff on him because you know you get Pharrell on a couple of tracks.
Bit of Pharrell on there would be nice. Do you reckon someone like Justin Timberlake could go on for a little bit of a...
he'd come in. I imagine they'd talk Andy Samberg to come in as well.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Bit of Lonely Island
stuff.
That'd
be really good.
But, yeah, I could see him potentially talking the guys from Outkast to get involved or he would choose left of center stuff. He wouldn't just get West Coast rappers.
But that's the kind of stuff that interests you. You want the left of center, like the guesses that
he's got to have Martha on so the two of them, Martha Stewart, they can cook their Christmas turkey.
Last time I saw her, she was posing for a photo shoot in her pool.
Sure.
But that was summer. She'd be busy baking cookies now, right?
I imagine so.
Yeah.
Mom.
She could bake brownies for him.
Has.
Again.
Apparently she's an absolute baller when it comes to how much of the kit she puts in.
Yeah, really?
Yep.
So people have to be warned.
Yep.
Okay, fantastic.
Yep.
Well, that was a very Christmassy chat. I enjoyed it.
Oh, that's not, I've not finished on the Christmas gear.
Do you want to continue?
Should I?
Well, you might as well.
All right. Well, one thing that I watched fully was on Netflix have two episodes of a Christmas-themed spin-off of one of their shows, The Movies That Made Us. They now have two holiday movies that made us, Elf and Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, neither of those two were the ones I was going to guess. But I'm on board to find out what happens in Elf.
The Elf one was great. I haven't watched Nightmare Before Christmas through yet. I hate Tim Burton. But I love stop motion and Danny Elfman. So there's a lot of good I love
it's
about
great
Nightmare.
Style. That's very stylized.
This is the first full feature length stop motion movie.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah. So it's a very important film. Yeah. I'm interested to watch that. But the Elf one was fantastic just in terms of the uphill battle they had the entire way making that movie.
Really?
Oh, come on. No one had any faith in Will Ferrell at that point. He hadn't even had Old School come out. He was.
Maybe because that was around the time that I was watching Saturday Night Live. So as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh. Will Ferrell, yes.
Yep. So at that point, he'd only had A Night at the Roxbury come out.
Yeah, okay.
Old School came out 2.5 months before Elf. Mm-hmm. So the marketing people suddenly panicked because they thought they had the funny guy from SNL and all of a sudden they had Frank the Tank from Old School, the dude that drinks and destroys.
Yeah, right. And he's so different in Elf, obviously.
Yes. So really solid watch. I can't really handle the narrator. I'm sure you've seen some of those. It's a little bit too, hey, and that bit, and what did you say? And then it cuts to an interview and it's like, hey, come on, man.
Yeah,
down.
The editing is a lot.
Yeah, but they pick films that are never too serious. So it works.
Mm-hmm.
And look, the other Christmas one I'll mention is the one that I hadn't finished watching yet.
Oh, no.
I don't think I will finish watching.
Uh-oh.
Only because we put it on Disney Plus for Shay and she was bored in about 10 minutes, which doesn't happen too often. But there's a film out called Godmothered.
I've seen it sitting there. I haven't watched it, but I've seen it there.
It's Gillian Bell from Workaholics. Many other things you can insert your own.
Yeah,
where she's
but
from.
You've got to have a point of reference.
That's right. She's a trainee godmother who has to pass her godmother exam or something or get an assignment before a certain date because they're going to shut the school down and then she'd have to be a tooth fairy.
Oh, and she wants to be a fairy. Okay.
And so she finds a letter from a girl
named
Mackenzie and goes to be her fairy godmother only to discover that the letter was sent 32 years ago and the woman is now a 40-year-old Isla Fisher.
I mean, to be honest with you, that's a pretty good premise.
It is a good premise.
Yeah.
And I imagine I could enjoy this, but we watched a bit and Shay was not feeling it.
Okay.
I think it was a little bit too much questioning the rules of fairy tales.
Sure.
And those.
Yep.
She's at an age right now where she's asking questions about these things. I think she's onto me.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
I'm pretty sure she's onto me, but she's not.
It'd be interesting to see how she goes next year then.
Yes.
Maybe that movie will appeal to her.
Yes. I think if we move away from that questioning things, then she could quite enjoy it. But it's that idea of being a fairy godmother or a tooth fairy. She's like, hang on.
These are not the rules that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she might just be a touch young for it. Mm. But cool people involved.
Mm.
Good on them.
I like Isla Fisher.
I do as well. And I've got a lot of time for Gillian Bell. I think she should be a lot bigger than she is.
Yeah.
Melissa McCarthy, get out of the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, I've just shanghaied a lot.
Oh, no, that's okay. I just felt like it had to be all in the one section because it was Christmassy.
It was all Christmassy
stuff.
And I
was going to change it all up. Because a couple of weeks ago, actually, I watched a movie called Bombshell, which I don't know if you remember. It's from a couple of years ago, maybe last year.
Is that Seth Rogen?
No. Oh, no. This one is Charlize Theron, Margot Robbie, Nicole Kidman.
I was about to say it's Charlize Theron because she's the other person in that movie.
She's the other person. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So yes, I know the one you're talking about.
It's a good movie though. So this one was, apart from Margot Robbie, who's playing apparently an amalgamation of a few different real life people.
Yes.
They're all playing real
people.
People, journalists, TV presenters from Fox News.
So I followed the production of that film quite closely. I don't know how I haven't watched it yet. There are bits and pieces that changed last minute. But
okay. Oh, okay. Interesting. Well, I didn't think I'd be that interested in it. It was, you know when it's a group decision? You're like, oh, yeah, we'll watch that. Yeah, why not? See how it goes. It was really good.
Nice.
It was really good. Once again, I mean, with help from, you know, prosthetics and the makeup artist, Charlize Theron manages to not look like herself again.
She loves doing a bit of that, Kit. She's I'm still bothered by her looking monster.
Me too. Mm. It's so different, yep, but looks just so real. It's frightening. Nicole Kidman also has a bit of prosthetics on there, but she...
Is it a forehead reduction?
Or? Yeah, there's something to do with her chin.
Okay.
I think for her, like they've elongated her chin just a little bit.
Oh, that, okay, because, yeah, I did see some of it, and that's why I said that they shortened forehead, but that makes more sense if they've elongated the chin. That's why I would think that. Okay.
So...
And that makes a lot more sense than attempting to shorten someone's forehead. Yeah, what a dumb thing. Sorry, I'm so tired. I will
shorten my forehead and that will be great.
I'm so tired.
John Lithgow's super, he's exactly the type of person you would think
and
would be.
And is he playing Roger? Yeah.
Yeah, the bloke in charge of Fox News.
Roger Avery.
Yeah, and it's set 2016 around the time when Trump's trying to become president. Yeah, really good. I don't know why people are sleeping on it. Just sure. Watch it.
Oh, look, part of the reason is it was being made by one production company that went under were about to start filming or something. So they had to scramble and get different distributors and it basically got lost a bit in the shuffle
of
marketing things and stuff in a change between companies.
Yeah, that's a real shame because everybody's really good. It's a very unsettling scene with John Lithgow and Margot Robbie that apparently she found it very hard to do, so they only filmed it once. Yeah.
Sure.
Now, the TV show that I only watched half of, I saw on Netflix there was, I think it was like number 4 or something called Alien Worlds, and it was like a documentary. And I was like, this looks a bit of interestingness, where they were kind of looking at other planets and what the animals or creatures on those planets could potentially
Yeah, sure. What's an alternate ecosystem?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I realized I wasn't into it was when I walked away for 20 minutes.
Yeah. It is something that it looks like I might enjoy that as a real late night watch.
Yeah, I think it's a late night watch. I also saw on Twitter somebody say that it's really good if you are on a, depending on where you live, legal substance.
That's what I'm getting back by a late night viewing.
Apparently it pairs very well.
A couple of cheeky beverages or whatever your poison chalice is.
Exactly.
That is on my list of things I intend to check out.
See what you think. I'd be interested to see if maybe I was not in the right mood or... Or if my expectation was wrong going in.
I have a feeling it's not going to sit great with me as well. I'm still getting through Cosmos at the moment, the second season of Cosmos, and I'm learning that those type of shows, the further they move away from fact, the less invested you get. Because you smugly watch those shows to go, I'm so intelligent, I understand the quantum mechanics. Like, yeah, let's talk about Casimir effects. Don't get too close to that threshold, Neil deGrasse Tyson. I don't want you falling in.
That's a good voice.
It's that sort of thing. Whereas fanciful creatures and stuff, it's a bit... It's Jurassic Park.
It's Jurassic Park, but it's kind of teetering on, hey, look at these cool creatures that we have made up, like invented, but based on what we think the science is versus now we're just a nature documentary because we're looking at the equivalent in
and you know Earth. Do they have a weird fucked up Mars duck voiced by John Cleese or something like that's
how far do you go before there's two audiences not getting what they want? And I think that maybe is
sure
is
it might just exist in that nexus point in between.
That's right. Gosh, we're clever. Listen to all the important things we've said.
I've been reading plenty of quantum stuff lately.
Gosh, you're clever.
There's a moment in Palm Springs, which doesn't look like it should be about that stuff, but from what I used to work on Lost, one moment happened on screen and I'm like, oh, shit, did someone finally film that? And
I've piqued your interest and you've now delved it. Awesome when that kind of thing happens.
Really deep diving because I've never seen an actual visualization of this particular effect. We've heard about it, talked about it a lot, and we've seen space versions of this in movies, but we've never seen what it would be like as a terrestrial event on Earth.
Well, look, I will see how I go this weekend. I might try and watch it.
Look,
I'm also aware of the fact that I do want to watch a couple more Christmas movies or TV specials before we get into next week's episode. A special guest in next week's episode as well. Say more.
Look, you don't have to race to see Palm Springs, but I would suggest seeing it in 2020 because it is the most 2020 film I've seen this year.
Yeah, okay.
In terms of monotonous repetition, which is something we've all experienced this year.
More than others.
Well, and just in a greatly, everyone's greatly reduced what their previous barometer for a successful day is. You know what I mean? Yeah. It used to be you had to do this, this, and this. And now these days it's like, if I get that, that, and I've got pants, it's cool.
I will be watching Below Deck, 3 episodes of it.
That's it.
And I will have succeeded.
So that's the vibe.
Yeah, okay.
This movie has just accepting nihilism, which is not a theme that comes up in movies often. It's always breaking that person out. And this is like, maybe it's all right. Maybe
yeah,
it's cool.
Yeah, because Groundhog Day was certainly break that person out. Well, they were trying to break themselves out. Mm, oh, cool. Have you watched anything else worth mentioning?
Look, only briefly, that Mando was a great episode
this
week.
It was so good, wasn't it?
If you haven't watched it yet, we won't spoil who's back. We've talked about him in the past plenty of times. We thought it was right. Holy shit, he beat people to death with a Tusken Raider's weapon.
I don't think I've ever seen that much violence towards stormtroopers before. And you usually just see them like knocked out or shot with a laser thing. They just sort of fall.
So Robert Rodriguez directed this episode, and apparently he came in very late. That someone else was going to do it, and the show has gone to so many crazy locales already, and sure enough stuff that he specifically wanted the stormtroopers to look pathetic trying to fight their way up a tiny hill.
Mm.
And that's the vibe they go for,
it
really nails it. Of like, how can three, admittedly very skilled people, but just three people, stand up against two plane loads of stormtroopers?
Yeah, and
the other moment that I have to give a shout out to.
Yeah.
So Robert Rodriguez, his signature move. Two things. One is someone not walking away, but someone looking away from an explosion.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a really good one of those.
That was a good one.
And the other one is having weapons stored and then fired from unsuspecting places. He did, it was Death Proof, and the other one, the double feature he did with Quentin Tarantino, in that Rose McGowan has a prosthetic leg that she attaches a Uzi to.
I've not seen the movie. That sounds amazing.
El Mariachi, Once Upon a Time in Mexico. Yep. There are guns hidden inside mariachi guitar cases.
Yeah, right. Yeah, cool.
So the fact that this character puts one knee up on that rock and then rockets shoot out of the knee was like, that is the most Robert Rodriguez thing I've seen in 5 years.
Another thing I liked about that is, I'll skirt around, is that that person only just wore that outfit. I'm trying to be as unspoilery as possible, but knew so much about it that they knew that that was a thing.
Well, that was the second retcon of that person's backstory.
Yes, it was.
When they talk about the father and their relation to the Mandalorians,
yep.
Complete retcon. That's completely different to what the story has been. And everyone's pretty happy with it.
Mm.
It ties them very closer to Mando and the storyline they're telling here.
So originally,
this character's father had stolen Mando, like Beskar armor.
Yep.
And had lived in it long enough to claim it as his own. Whereas this now retcons him to have been the exact same as what Mando is, taken as an orphan.
Okay.
So suddenly there is a deep, deep level of respect between this character and Mando. It was the most action that character's seen in any of the films, or maybe not the TV series, Rebels, Clone Wars, that character's been in. But in terms of the movies, it's the most they've done.
I think it looks like it became more obvious in this episode that clearly they are tying it to Rise of Skywalker, the storyline. I won't say too much, but we got little touches of it in the first season, maybe 2-3 episodes ago.
Yep.
Again, and then this one I was like, okay.
Yep.
That's
you're talking about where they're sitting?
Yeah, where they're sitting, and also the kid Grogu is obviously how they got Palpatine back.
That's a very good theory. I like that. I think we're finally going to get to spend some time with an actual Grey Jedi.
I'm looking forward to that.
Which this... we got a tiny touch with a few episodes ago.
Yep.
Yeah, or last week, whenever it was.
Last week,
a tiny touch of what a Grey Jedi could be. But I want to see an untrained Jedi, because that's what the child would be. He's had some initial training and stuff, but he's not properly trained in the Force.
He's had less, I think, than Anakin, right?
I don't know, because he's 50.
Oh, he is 50. That's right.
It's so easy to forget.
I forgot.
He's 50.
Yeah, he is.
And they've nailed that face he makes when he turns and hears his voice, because that's – Lily made that face. Shay made that face. Every baby makes that face. They hear their noise. Their name.
Yeah, their name.
Turn around into it. I'm excited to see where they take that, because they've – I think this season was about – there's a quest. You've got to return him to his people. You've got to send him to his people. And then he gets to his people and he's already broken.
Yeah.
This is damaged goods. Yeah. We saw what happened last time damaged goods got trained.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do it. So instead, let's have a mercenary. Have him a mercenary kid who helps out.
It's so interesting to figure out if he does become something big, not Rise of Skywalker Link, I'm not talking about that right now, but something big and how he ties into the stories, the movies without being talked about.
Yeah, I don't need him to tie in. I'll be honest, I don't. I'd be perfectly happy if Mandalorian stays well away from the most recent trilogy.
For sure. Yeah.
Because it's still 24 years before the first one or something.
Yep. He'd be 75 by then. Big boy.
Might get to wear a button-up shirt.
Yeah. I'd watch. Would you like to have a quiz?
May I? Let me get my bowl.
This one, we are starting our Christmas quiz tradition early.
Mm.
This is where was it set?
All right.
Christmas movies, you got to tell me where they were set. City. Jingle All the Way.
Turbo Man. let me think.
This one I was surprised about.
Okay. So it's not a New York.
It's not New York.
And I don't think it's in LA.
Mm-mm. It's cold, I think, isn't it?
Is it like a Wisconsin or a Chicago?
You're close.
Detroit?
It starts with M.
Minneapolis?
That's it.
Okay.
Minneapolis.
Massachusetts was my next guess.
Oh, yeah.
Minneapolis.
That'd be more like provincial.
Minneapolis is the heart of great Midwest rap in America. It's where, not Soul Side, is what they're called. Atmosphere, Idea and Ability. A whole bunch of great rappers come from there. And then some of them are in hot water at the moment.
Oh, okay.
Touchy, touchy. Hands off.
Oh, right. If you want to find out more, you can look it up yourself.
Yeah.
From 2015, a great movie that I watched a couple of years ago, The Night Before. That's Seth Rogen.
Rogen, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and Anthony Mackie.
Big names.
Is it New York?
It is. It's New York.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Because I knew it was a raucous wild night. And if you're going to have a raucous wild night at Christmas, New York.
Oh, I see. Concrete Jungle where dreams are made of. In the year 2000, we got the Jim Carrey movie of The Grinch. Where is that set?
Whoville.
Mm-hmm. Very well done. Very well done. I was like, if you don't remember the movie, there's no way you're going to guess
technically,
that
technically, it's Universal Studios Hollywood.
Yeah,
and
okay.
The set is still there.
Is it?
Yep.
Okay. Have you been?
I have.
Nice.
Yeah, it's part of the
just
tour.
Christmassy.
They drive around in there. Yeah. Right. Ron Howard created Whoville. No, he didn't. Ron Howard made a movie with
that's
Whoville.
Right. Dr. Seuss has something to say about that, that's for sure. In 1989, the bestest Christmas movie in the world was made. Christmas Vacation by National Lampoons. Mm. Where's that set? Where are those Griswolds from?
Okay. I'm going to put this together in my head because they have a multi-day car trip across the country to go to
Wally World.
Wally World is on the West Coast, which are they in Chicago?
They are. Chicago, nice work. That was good. That was very, very good.
Because I want to bite my tongue in case we've got to hear the other one.
Okay. All right. We've got two more.
I have a theory about Chicago and Christmas.
Me too. Well, hang on. Okay. So 2003, Bad Santa. Where was that set? I had to look this one up. I genuinely didn't remember.
Is it Detroit?
No, it was Phoenix. I don't remember that at all.
I can see why I thought Detroit.
Yeah,
But yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, Phoenix, it's an unexpected...
A random place for a Christmas movie to be set.
I understand why they do that, because in a bigger city, people would shut down a shitty Santa quicker. Yeah. They wouldn't
stand we got no time for that. Another classic, Home Alone.
Chicago.
Yeah, that's Chicago as well. So our theory, I think, is the same, right? Because I've been watching a fair bit of Christmas movies recently, and if it looks like a city, I assume that most Christmas movies are set in Chicago.
It's because of the windy city.
Yeah.
They get snow real good.
Snow comes in. Yeah. It looks city enough without looking – because you know how New York looks like New York, where Chicago can just look like a city.
Chicago is Gotham. Like, that's why they film there, is that it's so New York is always – it's metropolis. It's always pointed towards the future and growth and getting bigger. And Chicago has somewhat stagnated and is stuck in a crime-ridden past. And anywhere you look and you pull the covers up, you find some shady stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, so I don't know why Christmas is so big there. But
I don't know why either.
I think you're onto something with the weather patterns.
Yeah, because it can be snowy. It may also be cheaper than New York to film in.
Sure.
How much of Home Alone do you reckon was actually filmed there?
A fair bit. Because there's a lot of exterior work on that house. And it is a house in Chicago.
Mm.
Yeah.
Chicago, the capital of Christmas.
Chicago, ho, ho.
I was like, I'm just going to let him sit there for a bit because something's ruminating.
It wasn't a good
there.
One, but it happened.
It was one. And on that note, Tom, thank you very much.
I am underneath the microphone.
Literally, you are.
I know. I've fallen down in the seat because I'm going to have a nap.
Okay. Night-night.
Night-night.